This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
When and Lord LeBlanc said, he said, people think forgiveness is weak, like you're condoning what they did. He said, it kills you to not to forgive. It was killing me. And he said, because who I am is to be a person who loves people and helps people. And so it was a way of preserving your own life. And it gave me an insight. When Jesus said, love your enemies, it doesn't mean condone what enemies do. Or it's gotten to be like a cliche, you know, that people say, oh, yeah, forgive and forget. But it's not letting the love and integrity of our life be damaged forever by the hate.
Sister Helen Prejean and Bill Pelkey, we thank you for being with us. Bill Pelkey will follow up on whether or not you meet with Paula Cooper. And Helen Prejean, we're going to do part two of this interview after the broadcast and post it at democracynow.org. We thank you both for being with us.
That
does it for our broadcast. Our website is democracynow.org. Helen Prejean's book is called Dead Man Walking, the eyewitness account of the death penalty that sparked a national debate. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis. The time is 5:01. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual 2013 Closer Electronic Music Festival, which starts June 20th. Closer PDX is hosting this cutting-edge electronic music and dance festival with an unparalleled selection of local and regional talent and labels. The Closer Electronic Music Festival is being held on the inner sides of East and West Portland at many different venues. From the kickoff at Crush on June 20th to the Closer at Selwood Riverfront on June 23rd, there will be more than 50 performers and special guests. More information and tickets for this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good in the Hood returns to celebrate its 20th year, June 20th through the 30th. Good in the Hood is a multicultural music and food festival featuring a parade, information village, kids space, arts and crafts, and an ethnic marketplace. Saturday, June 29th, Good in the Hood will be at Lillis Albina Park in North Portland with music, and KBOO will broadcast live from the park from 2 to 7 p.m. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, activists demand compassionate release for human rights attorney Lynn Stewart, who's developed stage 4 lung cancer in prison.
Mayor Charlie Hales unveiled his new budget, which includes cuts to homeless shelters and youth programs.
And protesters picketed City Hall today to demand Portland's reservoirs stay uncovered.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 19th, 2013. I'm Nia Lewis.
And I'm Brian Pritchett. Portland City Council is expected to approve the city's 2013 and 2014 budget tomorrow. Although the cuts are not as drastic as the mayor's initial proposal in April, there will be a number of departments and services affected and an estimated 26 layoffs. When Charlie Hales called for city spending to be cut by 10%, some feared this would escalate to sequester-style across-the-board cuts. through a combination of agreements with citizen groups, creative funding shifts, and a deal with the county, fears of massive cuts to public safety and social services have been assuaged. The proposed budget will introduce some austerity measures that have drawn criticism and protest in recent months, including funding for homeless shelters and youth programs. One city department being shut down is the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, which was established in 2009 to promote ecological, economic, and recreational usage of the Willamette and Columbia Rivers. A number of the city's funding of programs and social services-related cuts are to be absorbed by Multnomah County, which is having a budget surplus and made an agreement with the mayor last month.
During today's city council meeting, protesters massed outside City Hall to persuade commissioners to keep fighting a federal regulation that requires Portland's reservoirs to be covered. Earlier in the month, Mayor Charlie Hales and the other commissioners, except Amanda Fritz, issued a letter stating the city would proceed with the federally mandated changes. A protest group called Occupy Mount Tabor formed in opposition to the letter and sent about 20 people to picket City Hall today. Over the last 5 years, Portland has filed several appeals to the Oregon Health Authority, which has regulatory oversight. The latest appeal was shot down in February, after which Hales decided to give up the fight. Hales said when he announced his decision that he was out of options.
The Beaverton City Council approved a $185 million budget on Wednesday in a 3-to-1 vote. This is a 3.2% increase over last year's budget. The budget will increase water rates, but keep property tax rates steady. Water base charges will increase by 10%, and there will be a 10-cent increase in the water consumption rate. City Councilor Ian King was the only no vote for the budget on Wednesday evening. King said that the budget did not propose enough current or future spending cuts to match the decision to keep the tax revenue steady. Citizens raised concerns at the budget meeting about Mayor Doyle's almost 8% salary increase and spending to the Sister City program. There is also concern about the cost of renovation to the South Office Building. Beaverton purchased the property last year with plans to relocate city government offices to that location. Significant renovations are needed before that move can be made. The budget approved Wednesday includes an increase from $12.7 million to $19.5 million for capital improvement projects.
Some of Oregon's 13,000 children in foster care will participate in foster youth summits in June and July. The first concerns Native American youth. In collaboration with the Oregon News Service, KBOO's Ben Renner has more.
A Bill of Rights for Oregon Kids in Foster Care is on a path to becoming state law, and this summer, some of the young people who advocated for it are celebrating their success and looking ahead. Tomorrow, the first in a series of foster youth summits takes place in Grand Ronde. This one is focused on Native American young people, who are disproportionately represented in foster care in Oregon. Dana Einem with the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde says the skills taught at the summits should come naturally to Indian youth.
I think one of the important things about, you know, coming from an Indian community is the role of leadership and advocacy in our communities is really high or a value at all different kinds of levels, and to be able to see the type of change that young people can affect. I think that's really an important connection that we're going to try to make.
There are about 13,000 children in foster care in Oregon. The most recent governor's task force report says the rate of Native American and Alaska Native children cared for by people other than relatives is 5 times the rate of white children. Lydia Bradley, who manages the Oregon Foster Youth Connection, says the aim of the Foster Youth Summit is to help kids develop confidence and leadership skills. She says they can learn that they can take tough life experiences and turn them into momentum for change in their own lives and to help others in the foster care system.
Foster youth experience many, many placements, and so they often don't have the experience of bonding with their peers because they're moving so much. And so bringing youth together to kind of connect around a shared experience really is a unique opportunity for them and, you know, a special one.
Other foster youth summits will be held in July in Lane and Marion counties in the Portland metro area. In collaboration with the Oregon News Service, this is Ben Renner with KBOO News.
A federal judge has ruled that the National Labor Relations Board overstepped its authority when ruling that union electricians should perform the plugging and unplugging of refrigerated containers at the Portland port. The Pacific Maritime Association successfully argued that the NLRB does not have jurisdiction in a disagreement when one set of workers is employed by a government agency, such as the Port of Portland. This reopens the dispute over which union workers have this responsibility. The original ruling resulted in the longshoremen engaging in an alleged work slowdown last summer and the locking out of these workers by their employers at the Port of Portland.
Service Employees International Union, Local 503, or SEIU, and Oregon's Department of Administrative Services, or DAS, each submitted final contract offers last night. SEIU has been protesting proposed cuts to the salaries and benefits of public employees. SEIU declared an impasse last week, giving both sides a week to submit their final contract offers and setting a 30-day cool-off period before the union can strike and the state can implement its contract offer. The impasse declaration comes after weeks of negotiation and surprised DAS officials. Despite the impasse, negotiations will continue at least until the union can strike. The crux of the negotiations rests on the economic package, which includes step increases, cost of living adjustments, and furlough days. The state cannot make a firm offer until the legislature passes a budget, which still may be weeks away. Governor John Kitzhaber said early in the legislative session that he planned to cut furlough days for employees who have taken them 4 years in a row, but made no statements about salaries or benefits. Union leaders indicated that the impasse was not a sign that SEIU will strike.
The Oregon State Senate today voted to pass a bill that will allow a state official to seek restitution on behalf of consumers who have suffered damages as a result of violations by their insurance company. Senator Lee Beyer was one of the sponsors of the motion and spoke this morning on the Senate floor.
Senate Bill 414 gives the authority to the director of the Department of Commerce and Business Services, also the insurance commissioner, to take any actions necessary to enforce the insurance code. Probably like me, you were surprised to find that the director, the insurance commissioner, didn't have the authority to do that. But this bill gives them that authority. It gives them the authority and the power to seek restitution and other equitable relief on behalf of consumers who suffer damage as a result of insurers' violation of the insurance code. So I think it's gives them the ability to do what's necessary. The bill was supported by a number of insurance companies, and I'm just quoting here, and it says State Farm and State Farm agents and every other insurer and insurance producer are fully supportive of this recommended enhancement of regulatory authority. Standard Insurance Company said this is an appropriate remedy. And let's see, the Oregon Business Alliance says SB 414, which grants restitution authority to DCBS for insurers' misconduct, is a much more Oregon-like solution. I urge your support.
The bill passed the Senate and now heads to the governor for approval. Another bill passed by the Oregon State Senate will prevent the construction of a controversial composting facility in the Stafford area. The company involved, S&H Logging, already put its plans on hold with the expectation that the bill would pass. Initially, the bill was sparked by more than 1,000 odor complaints regarding an existing composting facility. The Oregon House of Representatives today approved a bill requiring that parents provide a signed form from a doctor or review a vaccine education program before being allowed to circumvent state vaccination requirements for school children. And the Oregon Senate will get another chance later this week to approve a budget for Oregon schools after a negotiated bill failed to pass earlier this week. Republicans and Democrats are now in talks to figure out a way to get the $6.5 billion school budget passed this Friday.
Earlier this morning, the Interstate 5 Skagit Bridge in Mount Vernon, Washington, reopened, restoring traffic on the main route between Seattle and Vancouver, British Columbia. The new temporary span was rapidly constructed by way of an emergency contract between Atkinson Construction and the Transportation Department. This comes in response to the bridge's collapse last month on May 23rd after an overloaded truck collided with a section of the bridge. The new construction cost about $18 million, most of which was funded by the Federal Transportation Department. Despite the latest renovation, the 58-year-old bridge is still rated as functionally obsolete because it was not constructed to support today's large trucks and traffic volume. In related news, an updated study about the condition of the nation's highways was released today, rating Oregon 7th among states with the best highway bridges.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Free Speech Radio news after this newscast, followed by Occupy Portland Radio at 6. At 7 o'clock, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly cloudy again, with a 30% chance of rain and a high temperature of only 65 degrees.
It's 5:14 in the post-meridian. Time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
It's back. The Patriot Act, a grotesque, ever-mutating, hydra-headed monstrosity from the Bush-Cheney Little Shop of Horrors, has risen again, this time with an added twist of Orwellian intrusiveness from the Obamacans. Since 2006, Team Bush and then Team Obama have allowed the little-known, hugely powerful National Security Agency to run a daily dragnet through your and my phone calls. All on the hush-hush, of course, not informing us spyees. Now exposed, leaders of both parties are pointing to the Patriot Act, saying that it makes this wholesale, everyday invasion of our privacy perfectly legal. When the story broke, Obama dissembled, calling these massive and routine violations of the Fourth Amendment modest intrusions that are worth us doing to make us more secure. He added disingenuously that Congress is regularly briefed about the program. In fact, only a handful of members are briefed, and they have been flatly lied to by Obama's Director of National Intelligence. Yet, Senator Dianne Feinstein loyally defends spying on Americans, claiming it protects us from terrorists. But then, she admitted she really doesn't know how the mountains of data are being used. This is nothing but a bottomless trust us swamp created by the panicky passage and irresponsible reauthorization of the Patriot Act. Secretly seizing everyone's phone records is, as the ACLU put it, beyond Orwellian. As a New York Times editorial flatly and rightly says, the administration has now lost all credibility on this issue. But no administration can be trusted to restrain itself from abusing the unlimited power of the Patriot Act. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's not enough to fight NSA's outrageously invasive spying on us. The Patriot Act itself is a shameful betrayal of America's ideals, and it must be repealed.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The Associated Press held a conference today criticizing the U.S. Justice Department for seizing hundreds of phone records of reporters. AP President Gary Pruitt spoke to reporters at the National Press Club this morning to outline ways to protect news gathering against government interference. He said that such measures are necessary in the wake of the Department of Justice's seizure of AP phone records.
The actions of the DOJ against AP are already having an impact beyond the specifics of this particular case. Some of our longtime trusted sources have become nervous and anxious about talking to us, even on stories that aren't about national security. And in some cases, government employees that we once checked in with regularly will no longer speak to us by phone, and some are reluctant to meet in person. In one instance, our journalists couldn't get a law enforcement official to confirm a detail that had been reported by other media. And I can tell you that this chilling effect is not just at AP. It's happening at other news organizations as well. Journalists from other news organizations have personally told me it has intimidated sources from speaking to them. Now, the government may love this. I suspect they do. But beware the government that loves secrecy too much. Today, I want to provide you on the latest news from the front on the seizure of AP's phone records by the Department of Justice, what AP is doing about it, and the implications for us all. So on May 7th of last year, 2012, AP published a story on a foiled plot by an Al-Qaeda affiliate in Yemen. Al-Qaeda was planning to use a new and more sophisticated bomb to destroy an airliner headed for the United States. Our story revealed that the CIA had thwarted this attack, and which was intended to coincide with the first anniversary of the killing of Osama bin Laden. But the story also brought into question a statement made by White House Press Secretary Jay Carney. Just 2 weeks earlier, Carney had said, "We have no credible information that terrorist organizations, including Al-Qaeda, are plotting attacks in the U.S. to coincide with the anniversary of bin Laden's death." Yet, here was AP finding that, in fact, the CIA has been right in the middle of foiling exactly such a plot. It turns out that the person who was to carry the bomb was a double agent, working with the CIA, the Saudis, and the British. Last month, on Friday, May 10th, we received a letter from the Department of Justice informing us that it had secretly seized the records for 21 AP phone lines, which we now learn, which we now know, was over a 40-day period around the same time that our story was released. So this was an unprecedented intrusion into AP's news gathering records. We had never seen anything like this before. And it was an intrusion by government officials that was so broad, so overreaching, so secretive, that it violated the protective zone that the First Amendment provides journalists in the United States. We do not dispute that the U.S. government has the right to pursue those who leak classified information. And this administration has prosecuted leakers like no other in the country's history. But the Justice Department has rules about how subpoenas that target the press work. In the sweep up of the AP's phone records, DOJ leadership violated its own rules.
That was Gary Pruitt, the president of the Associated Press, speaking today in Washington, D.C. about the seizure of phone records by the U.S. Justice Department.
A vigil begins today in Washington, D.C. to call for the release of 73-year-old People's Attorney Lynn Stewart. She's currently serving a 10-year sentence for releasing a press release on behalf of her client, Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman. Lynn Stewart is suffering from stage 4 cancer, and hundreds of well-known civil rights leaders and activists have called for her release. Stewart's husband, civil rights activist Ralph Pointer, says that Stewart will likely die of cancer if she remains in prison. He said that she's getting inadequate medical treatment, and he's demanding Stewart's compassionate release. Pointer has begun staging a vigil for Lynn Stewart in Washington, D.C., and will continue the vigils until she is released, or until she dies. For more on the story, KBOO's Jennifer Kemp spoke with Ralph Pointer, Lynn Stewart's husband.
Talk about the case of your wife, Lynn Stewart. Why was she imprisoned, and do you think that the reasons were legitimate?
Now, the reason why she came at odds with the government was when Ramsey Clark, ex-attorney general of the United States, called her and asked her to do the Blind Sheikh's case. This was Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman, who had worked with Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan with the American government to overthrow the Russians. After that, Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman came to the United States to build organization against the corrupt dictator Hosni Mubarak of Egypt. He had no interest in America at all. Now, Hosni Mubarak, in Secret Service, had sent an operative, Imad Salem, to the United States to involve Sheikh Omar in a terrorist plot. And every time he tried, Sheikh Omar told him, this is told Imad Salem, no, this would not be good for Islam. No, pick another target. No, we cannot do this. And so the government indicted Sheikh Omar for not turning over Imad Salem, their operative, to them. And when Lynn tried to bring in a religious and Islamic specialist, I believe from Princeton University, to talk about the role of a cleric, the same as a priest. You stop people from doing things, but you don't report them when they confess. Judge Mukasey, who was the judge at the case, said it would only confuse the jury, this expert witness, on why a cleric could not turn in an operative. To make a long story short, Sheikh Omar was found guilty and got life plus 60 years. While he was being represented by Lynn Stewart and Abdeen Jabal and ex-Attorney General Ramsey Clark, Abdeen Jabal made press releases for the Sheikh. Ex-Attorney General Ramsey Clark made press releases for the Sheikh, and Lynn made one press release, and this is the gravamen of her case. They charged her with assisting terrorism. They charged her with plotting to kill American citizens overseas. They didn't say where, they didn't say who, they didn't say when, but they rode the crest of Islamophobia and embroiled Lynn into the case and then had Lynn on trial.
What is Lynn's medical condition and how far advanced is it?
Is in stage 4 cancer. Her medical condition was exacerbated because of the week that the Second Circuit said that she had to go to jail immediately. She was scheduled to have an operation in New York City. They said the operation could not, her going to jail could not wait. She went to jail, and as a result, it was 18 months after she went to jail before she got her operation. And then while she was in jail, her cancer, which was in remission, surfaced again. Now she is in stage 4 cancer. We want to get her out because we feel that she will die in jail and she qualifies for compassionate release. We want to get her back to New York so that she can live a dignified life and have an opportunity to fight the cancer. The example is when they discovered the cancer, it was a month before they took her back to look again. And it went from one lung to two lungs. It was another month before they took it back to check it out again, and it had metastasized into her lungs, her back, her bones. Then it was another month before, 4 months after they discovered the cancer, before they began to give her treatment. So she has received a death sentence for making a press release, which other attorneys have made before, during Lynn's trial, and after Lynn's trial. And so the government takes the right of selective prosecution because Lynn has been the people's attorney for 30 years, and as other attorneys have said, Lynn, you keep poking your finger in the government's eye.
Can you talk about the vigils that you've been holding? What are the details, and what do you hope to accomplish with them?
What we do is we go before the White House, where many people congregate or people pass by, tourists, basically, to see the White House. And we're there with literature speaking out on Lynn's case, making people aware of it. People from around the world come, and we pass the literature. There is another vigil that took place yesterday in front of the Bureau of Prisons. Dick Gregory attended. Other people went there, but it's very few people are at the Bureau of Prisons, only people who work there. So we want to get this story out far and wide. So we're doing vigils at both places. I personally am not sure how long the vigils will continue at the Bureau of Prisons, but I will be in front of the White House every day until Lynn is dead or out of jail.
Well, that's about all the time that we have to speak today, Ralph. But thank you again so much for doing the interview with me. This is Jennifer Kemp with KBOO News.
Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation has announced that it will split its assets in half as Murdoch seeks to build two new empires. The troubled publishing and newspaper asset will be traded under the old News Corporation name, while the more profitable entertainment assets will now trade under 21st Century Fox. Shareholders have pressed for a split for some time because of the increasingly poor returns from publishing. The catalyst for this change, which Murdoch has resisted, was the phone hacking scandal last year. That scandal exposed the fact that reporters working for News Corporation hacked into the phones and voicemails of numerous people, including crime victims, in order to get a scoop. Murdoch stated that he believes the future for newspapers is bright, given the advances of digital technology.
A U.S. Senate committee decided on Tuesday to approve legislation that will continue federal subsidies for timber counties in Oregon. The Natural Resources Committee also agreed to extend protections for wilderness areas and wild rivers in Oregon. Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon has pushed the two bills as part of an effort to continue subsidizing timber counties that depend on federal revenue as an alternative to wide-scale logging. The counties in question, mainly in southwestern and central Oregon, recently voted down measures that would have increased taxes on the wealthy and reduced their dependence on federal funding. Another bill being considered by the committee will allow increased logging of federal land in parts of western Oregon.
Tens of thousands of protesters gathered in Brazil today outside of a stadium where a major soccer match was scheduled to take place. Today's protests in Fortaleza follow several days of massive protests in dozens of large cities in which over 200,000 Brazilians participated. In Sao Paulo, over 50,000 people flooded the streets to join in the chorus of voices frustrated with a country which, they say, puts tourism and international events such as the upcoming 2014 World Cup and 2016 Olympics ahead of essential infrastructure and public interest. As evidence of the mass uprising has made some headway, officials from at least five cities announced plans yesterday to lower bus fares, the raising of which was the initial spark for the widespread demonstrations. The protesters currently gathered in Fortaleza are facing off against police armed with tear gas, rubber bullets, and beefed-up security. Today's rally follows an earlier announcement by the country's justice ministry that federal soldiers will be deployed to the cities hosting the two-week FIFA Confederations Cup soccer tournament, including the states of Ceará, where Fortaleza is located, Rio de Janeiro, Bahia, Minas Gerais, as well as the Federal District of Brasilia. Portland residents are staging a protest in solidarity with Brazilian protesters this Saturday at 3 p.m. in Pioneer Courthouse Square.
Radioactive material was discovered in the groundwater outside of the Fukushima nuclear plant, and experts say that this is yet another result of the March 2011 nuclear meltdown. Tokyo Electric Power Company, or TEPCO, have released reports indicating that storage tanks have been leaking into the surrounding groundwater and that their toxic byproducts have a high likelihood of running into the ocean, only 90 miles away. TEPCO has found evidence of strontium, a bone cancer-causing chemical, at 33 times the legal level in the groundwater, as well as also tritium, another toxic chemical, at 8 times the legal limit. The company claims that the concrete walls encircling the nuclear plant are enough to prevent water contamination, but TEPCO has also had a record of bending the truth in the past 2 years to maintain public approval, so Common Dreams writers are skeptical.
In the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, Afghan President Hamid Karzai said his government will not join U.S. peace talks with the Taliban and has pulled out of negotiations with the U.S. over a troop pact. Afghan officials said spokespeople said that the U.S. violated an agreement with the Afghan government to not assure official status to insurgents. The Taliban opened a political office in Doha, the capital of Qatar, yesterday, where the U.S. will meet for the peace talks. Afghan officials said this office gave the Taliban, quote, an official identity, unquote. Karzai also canceled negotiations on a security agreement stipulating the number of American troops who will stay behind after the planned U.S. pullout next year. Karzai cited, quote, the contradiction between acts and statements that the U.S. made during the peace process as his reasoning in a prepared statement.
And now the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, June 19, 2013. Israeli settlers attack Palestinian village and troops kidnap civilians during invasions targeting West Bank areas. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli settlers attacked on Wednesday afternoon a Palestinian night guard near Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem's Old City. Witnesses told local news that the settlers attacked the man while Israeli police officers were watching and did nothing to stop the attack. The guard sustained light wounds, the sources added. In other news, Palestinian sources reported on Wednesday that the Israeli army kidnapped a total of 18 Palestinians in different parts of the occupied West Bank. The army invaded the West Bank districts of Jenin, Nablus, Hebron, and occupied East Jerusalem, broke into and searched dozens of homes, and kidnapped 18 Palestinians. Three Palestinians were kidnapped from Kabalan village near the northern West Bank city of Nablus. Three more were kidnapped in Jenin, six in Al-Arub refugee camp near Hebron, and one near Al-Zahriya and Dura south of Hebron, and five in occupied East Jerusalem. Earlier on Tuesday late at night, a number of extremist Israeli settlers attacked the village of Asira al-Kibliya near the northern West Bank city of Nablus and burned the room of the guard of the local water storage facility. Local sources have reported that the settlers burned the room of the guard, who managed to escape unharmed. The settlers also tried to attack a number of homes in the village. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Wednesday, June 19th News Roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassam Kassis and me, Ghassan Barnoura.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jennifer Kemp, Jemiah Cherry, Robin Ryan, Nicole Betancourt, and Emily Sterling. The producer is Ben Renner. Special thanks to reporters at the Oregon News Service. Our engineer is Kurt Lauer. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. If you would like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard about on the news tonight, here are their phone numbers, so take them down. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. And Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 91.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, that's a new one, and K220HR in Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Nia Lewis. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. At 8, hear Voices from the Edge Talk Radio, progressive talk radio from a grassroots perspective with host Joanne Hardesty. At 9, hear Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fogering speaks with Moji Aga, founder of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute, about the legacy of Dr. Mossadegh and the recent election of Hassan Rouhani as president. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ren Green speaks with award-winning writer Colm McCann about his new novel, Transatlantic, a meditation on identity and history. And at 11:30, Radio Zine welcomes Oregon Poet Laureate Paulanne Peterson. She will read poems from her new full-length collection, Understory, and discuss her role as an ambassador of poetry with host Leanne Krantz. Thanks, KBOO members, for supporting this community radio station. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Stay tuned now for more national and international news from the Worker Run Collective at Free Speech Radio News. Have a lovely evening.
This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, June 19th, 2013. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, President Obama calls for a reduction of U.S. and Russian nuclear arms, but maintains the U.S. right to thousands of warheads. FBI Director Robert Mueller defends the government's broad surveillance programs before a Senate committee. And we'll go to Argentina, where indigenous rights activists are calling on the country to confront land right claims, education, and health care in native communities. Those stories and more coming up.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. Massive demonstrations are underway in Bulgaria's capital, Sofia, today, where discontent has erupted with the newly elected government. While this wave of protests started last week after the nomination of a media tycoon as security chief, there's also lingering anger over the previous government's utility hikes. FSRN's Roberto Nieto reports from Sofia.
Oh, stop.
More than 10,000 people gathered in the center of Sofia today, right in front of the presidential palace. They waved Bulgarian flags, blew whistles and horns, and chanted slogans calling for new elections and a new constitution. This will happen every day until the people win, they shouted as they marched. Today's gathering is the largest since the protests started. Presently, Bulgaria is ruled by a coalition government that some consider corrupt. Among the protesters is Vilislav. He opposes the government's decision to name a media mogul as security chief.
There's this particular occasion, which is the appointment of the security chief. But people are protesting against the arrogance of power in general.
Today, the government responded to the protesters by retracting the appointment. The prime minister apologized for the decision. It remains to be seen if these concessions will quell the unrest. Roberto Nieto, FSRN, Sofia.
The UN Refugee Agency says the rate of forced displacement is at an 18-year international high. In 2012, 7.6 million people were forced to leave their homes. About half of those were children. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Antonio Guterres says the conflict in Syria is fueling a high percentage of the displacements.
Refugees that fled from Syria since the 1st of January is more or less of the same amount of the total number of refugees that fled all over the world during 2012. This gives you an idea of how dramatic the Syrian crisis is.
About 55% of the world's refugees come from more afflicted countries, including Syria, Afghanistan, Somalia, Iraq, and Sudan. Opponents of fracking have scored a victory in Colorado as Boulder County commissioners voted to extend a moratorium against processing oil and gas permits. FSRN's Jim Pullen has more.
The decision Tuesday to extend the moratorium by another 18 months reversed earlier decisions that would have allowed the moratorium to expire in June and the phased-in development of oil and gas resources. The Boulder commissioners repeated the public's concerns about lingering health and air quality issues, the need to allow baseline monitoring and scientific studies to be completed, and that the phased-in approach may not slow the industry's rush to develop as they had originally believed. Anti-fracking groups were threatening a recall attempt against at least one of the three Democratic commissioners, and citizens have met to plan acts of civil disobedience. The oil and gas industry has threatened lawsuits against Boulder County, and the commissioners have voiced concerns the state may also sue over jurisdictional issues. Jim Pullen, FSRN, Boulder.
The American Medical Association says obesity is a disease. In a vote Tuesday at the AMA annual meeting, the group's policymaking arm said obesity, which affects about one in three Americans, requires a range of interventions. The group says recognizing obesity as a disease will advance changes in how the medical community approaches the issue. The U.S. House passed legislation banning abortion after 20 weeks yesterday, but a similar ban has failed to pass the Texas Senate. However, legislators did advance a bill Tuesday night that could shut down most abortion providers in the state. FSRN's Teddy Wilson reports.
The Texas Senate passed legislation requiring clinics that provide abortions to follow the same regulations as surgical clinics. The new rules would affect all but five of the 42 clinics in the state, forcing them to either undergo major facility upgrades or shut down. Rochelle Tofola of Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast says the new regulations would have a detrimental effect on women's health.
This agenda will end access to safe legal abortion in Texas if it goes through.
The bill is among items that Governor Rick Perry added to the special session. and now goes to the Republican-controlled House. Teddy Wilson, FSRN, College Station.
And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. Speaking in Germany today, President Barack Obama announced further reductions in the U.S. nuclear arsenal and said he'd pursue negotiations with Russia on the drawdown of deployed weapons.
After a comprehensive review, I've determined that we can ensure the security of America and our allies and maintain a strong and credible strategic deterrent while reducing our deployed strategic nuclear weapons by up to one-third. And I intend to seek negotiated cuts with Russia to move beyond Cold War nuclear postures.
Obama spoke at the historic Brandenburg Gate in Berlin, joined by Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel and the city's mayor. In 2010, Russia and the U.S. signed a New START treaty in which both countries agreed to cut their deployed nuclear weapons to about 1,500. But did not place limits on non-deployed weapons. According to the Pentagon, as of 2010, the U.S. had more than 5,000 warheads in its stockpile. Russian President Vladimir Putin said Moscow would not allow the effectiveness of the country's nuclear force to be decreased, and a senior foreign policy advisor, Yuri Ushakov, called for more countries to be involved in the talks, according to the BBC. Obama pledged to build support in Congress to ratify the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty and called on global nations to begin negotiations on a treaty to end production of fissile material for nuclear weapons. In the wake of revelations about the U.S. government's sweeping surveillance practices, some of the biggest companies that hand over private internet and phone data to the government, including Google and Yahoo, are challenging a ban on releasing more details to the public about what information they've given to the government. As many legal experts, members of Congress, and privacy advocates join this call for transparency and question the constitutionality of these spying programs, President Obama and the leaders of the FBI and NSA are speaking out in their defense. FBI Director Robert Mueller told a Senate committee Wednesday that the programs are legal and have sufficient oversights. On Capitol Hill, FSRN's Alice Olstein reports.
Speaking this morning in Berlin, President Obama